Grand Rising to all my kings, queens, gods, and goddesses. Thank you for showing up and sharing your time again with me, Kimberly Michael, that white girl. As usual, I'm always honored when I have on a guest, but by far, I can show favoritism because it's my podcast. This is one of my favorite people in the movement. I say it all the time. I post his information page all the time. And it's no less than the worship he deserves. I call him the verb of the Black Liberation Movement. And I'm honored to have the COF of the Black Liberation Movement in Mississippi, Patrick Alexander. Yeah. How are you today, sir?
I'm great, Kim. My honor you to have me on today. And those accolades that you just gave, I'm terribly appreciative of that. Most of us know, I know you know, that I'm technologically challenged. So it took me a while to get everything situated and get on. But now that we're here, I'm ready to do this podcast. I'm ready to speak to the audience, the listening audience, and talk about some liberation.
Yeah, absolutely. I think now's a really good time, too. I don't know about you, but people are home. And a lot of hopefully soul searching going on, and mind soul searching and knowledge searching, and maybe we can come out in movement in our wisdom instead of just knowing what we know. We can come out doing, you know, and making some things happen, which is why I call you the verb, because right now you in the doing process and you have been for a long time, but specifically right now you in the business of growing. It's that time of season, it's that part of the year where you're out there and you are actually doing what needs to be done, an essential resource in the movement, which is food. I definitely, you know, want you to talk about what you're doing right now as far as the start of this, you know, however you want to present it, because, you know, this is the knowledge base. And you are one of the, you know, you are the bottom of the pyramid, the most important, the foundation. That's what you're doing. So let's talk about it in every aspect that we can, not just about growing, but about growing.
Right, no doubt. And I like how you styled it, not just about growing, as in growing food and, you know, the agricultural development, but about growing as a people and a determination. The Black Liberation Movement, Kim, of course, you know, from the time that we've been affiliated, and you know that the determination of the Black Liberation Movement is to build power. And in the course of building power, we have to become, as a people, a black people, a black nation, we have to become self-sustaining and self-determined. So no nation can survive without an agriculture base. We have to be able to feed ourselves. You know what I'm saying? The great Dr. Murphy always told me, he said, hey, look, Patrick, you can't lead the people if you can't feed the people. So, you know, it's one of the greatest determination of the Black Liberation Movement, headquartered out of Mississippi, to be the manufacturers of a food source that we can depend on. So, That's one of the primary things that we're doing right now is developing small models of food manufacturing, distribution, marketing, and consuming, so that we can be able to control that aspect of our lives. So, you know, that's what we're doing right now. We're in the planting season, and we beginning to devise stronger methods of food manufacturing, and we establishing lines of distribution. We learning now how to begin to can and store in food pantries. And like you were just saying, you know, with the dilemma that the nation has presented right now, the world dynamic that we're dealing with this COVID-19, with people navigation and mobility being restricted, you know, we are beginning to see now how vulnerable we are, you know, as, you know, people, regardless of what your race is. Right now, you know, you are being dictated to by the power that be, and you're being instructed, and your mobility has been stagnate and control. So what does it look like to be in your home and not have food right now? You know, what that really look like, you know? So those are the things, and these dynamics, these world dynamics now brings us face to face with the reality of not being able to provide for self. Seeing how vulnerable we are, you know, as a people, especially Black people, because the resources are going to be deprived, and they're going to eventually be rationed out, whatever. Who would be the last, you know, in the hierarchy of this political structure to receive resources? So, you know, that's something that Black people really need to look at, and I think a lot of our people are beginning to see that reality, and for the Black liberation movement to be standing as strong and pronounced as it is. You know, I like to look at us as the little engine that could. So right now, we there. So, you know, I hope people be able to see that.
Right. And I think it's really important, let me touch on the fact that this is one of the things that I love about you the most, honestly, is that I get that a movement sometimes has to be quiet. I understand. And I understand the reasons behind that. And that, honestly, as far as Black movements go, and Black liberation movements go, I should say it that way, as far as Black liberation go and movements go, I understand that a lot of it has to do with the concern about white people knowing what's going on. And I get that. But at the end of the day, Black folks need to know what's going on. And being kept quiet for so long about what was going on in the movement itself did not grow the movement is the problem. And at the end of the day, let me just be really clear. Until really huge, big, I mean, mass movements going on, white people don't give a shit what's happening. And the fact that you understand that at the level that you're at, and I know that you get fucked with a lot. I know Facebook fucks with you. I know, you know, people fuck with you sometimes just about our affiliation. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know so much that you are up against that you can be quiet about, and you're not. And I think it's important because the Black Liberation Movement, you do not need to be a secret anymore. It needs to be out there that not only are we growing food and telling you to do it, we are willing to show you every aspect of growing the food, distribution, and marketing, all that involves in the,
that's right.
You know, totality that is the movement. And I think that's important. You know, people tell me all the time, oh, you ain't sending out privacy disclosures when you talk about your businesses and this. What you think do you really think I care if somebody steals an idea of mine that has something to do with Black liberation movement? Right. If that's what they really doing with it, then take the idea, run with it. I can't be in all 50 states.
Right.
I can't do what I'm doing by myself. Right. I can't push forward without a team. I can't do it without other people doing the same shit that I'm doing. You know,
right.
I love that you are saying, and that you always said, I'm not being quiet anymore. This is what I'm, and this is how I'm doing it. Please copy me. Please get involved. Please stand with me in one way or another. If you don't want to work with me then directly, then just don't work against me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And so, with that being said, that's the other growing part that I'm talking about, is that, yes, you growing food. Yes, you are making resources. Yes, you know, are doing all of these things. But how then do you effectively get some fire up under somebody else's ass to do the same damn thing? You know what I'm saying? Somebody who has an agriculture background, or somebody who doesn't. You weren't even, I remember when we first started, when I was stalking you, we can just call it what it is, and you know, trying to get you to have conversations with me, you know what I mean? And you said, last year, the first conversation we finally had, you said, you know what, Kimberly Schneider, last year I wasn't even a farmer. I had no idea what I'm doing. You've had broken down tractors, no equipment, no people. You've been the only one. I mean, you have been through literally the trenches to grow the food. And now here you are able to stand and say, this is what I'm doing, and this is how I'm doing it. So let's talk about doing it. Let's talk about the fact that you are open to people seeing what you are doing and speaking about how you are doing it and willing to share that information and how that can contribute. So important for the contribution.
Well, again, you ask the right questions, you get the most powerful and effective answers and conversations. So you're doing that by asking the right questions. And let me go back. You're exactly right, Kim. I've never been quiet about this movement. You know, I think that Black liberation should be shouted at the mountaintop. You know what I'm saying? The Black liberation movement is not a covert clandestine operation. Black liberation movement is very pronounced in your face. This is what we need to be doing. Yes, I have been confronted all throughout the life of the Black liberation movement as it exists under my leadership with other leaders of other Black organizations that basically tell me, you know, you should be underground, you have to move in these manners, in this stealth mannerism. And I'm like, I don't understand how that works. You know, I do understand that certain things that even we do now is not publicly pronounced, but for the most part, 95% of everything we do is wide open. And I think that creates a shield in itself for what's being done. When everybody knows that something's being done, then that's a level of protection right there. But when nobody knows that you exist, when you are infiltrated or when you destroy it, still don't nobody know that you exist. So you didn't exist. So, conversation right. that I had even as recently as this morning was linking up with other Black organizations that don't even pronounce Blackness. You know what I'm saying? So that's one of the reservations in the Black community that got to be dissolved. We can no longer be diffident about who we are. You know what I'm saying? We have suffered as a people in this nation a very specific and peculiar chastisement. And in itself demands that Black people do something different and be more pronounced about what it is that we do. So the Black liberation movement is not trying to be exposed. You know, it is my desire that everything that we do be pronounced with pride. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, we at the agricultural stage of this right here, and I feel like, you know, in the way that this thing works and the way that it plays out, is that our agriculture becomes the financial catalyst for our education. That education becomes the catalyst for our political and civic structure. And then we begin to turn out leaders, scholars, or whatever, to begin to lead our community in a civic and cultural way that is not being led now. So, you know, we literally, with our program, from the food to the education to the political and economic structure, we literally trying to eat our way to liberation. So that's what the determination of the Black liberation movement has is, has become, and will be. So that's the past, the present, and the future right there.
And it's brilliant. you know, because in all actuality, as you've stated, and everybody has stated before you, ancestors for years and years, without food, there's not going to be a community. I mean, that's just the end. That's just the end fall. There is nothing beyond that. If you cannot feed people, regardless, there isn't going to be people. I mean, that's just, it has to start, you know, from that. And, you know, I want to touch, I don't want to say off subject because it is about Black liberation, but it's also about the mindset that keeps the liberation down. You already know, and most of my listeners know how I feel. I get so much pushback, which we talked before I even did this podcast. You were like, you know, you need to be ready. And, you know, I mean, some days it gets on my nerves, and some days, you know, I get tired of talking to people about stuff. But I want to really touch about what you said about it being such a secret and keeping it down. And I'm just wondering, you know, keeping what you know, your movements. And of course, not everything. That's not what I mean by exposure, but the important things need to be, you know, out there. And I'm just wanting to put it down. Do you think that it has a lot to do with the same mindset across the board? I mean, you know, similar to, let me explain, similar to Underground Railroad. I hate to say it like this, but I mean, in the essence of everything was a secret back then because it had to be because of the possibility of death, okay? Or torture for that matter, torture and death, really. So everything was, everything had to be a secret. And, you know, because the at that point could destroy you. And granted, I'm not saying that through history after the civil rights movement and before where black communities and black money were not absolutely attacked in absolute war and nobody did shit about it. Absolutely happens. And it is, there is a possibility of that happening. But the possibility of that happening, instead of there being one pocket of liberation in a city, there needs to be pockets of multiple liberations going around in every major city, every literally, and I said this before and I'm gonna say it again, right now, in this moment, whatever you can bring to it. But I'm just wondering if that whole, if it's a mindset of a particular age set, that there is in the mindset that they have to do things in that slave mentality, like I have to be quiet, I have to make sure that, you know, white folks don't find out what I'm doing, if that, if you think is part of it, you know what I mean, that defeated mindset that we are always going to be defeated against them, you know what I'm saying, because the reality is you're not up against them. I'm not up against them. I'm not fighting white folks. I don't give a shit what they think or how they think or what they want to do. They're not going to stop me. All them white people on my page, most of them I don't respond to because they just proven my whole point about the mindset. Every time one of them comes on, they say the same shit that I just said, that that's how you going to think about it. And then they prove my point even farther. I saw something today. I wish I could go back. I'm not even going to be able to tell you who quoted it. I want to say, I'm not even going to say, because I don't want to get it wrong and I sound stupid. You know how I feel about my research and when I say shit, but basically if someone, there's a quote about how you cannot, you can't make a movement with people that are asleep. You have to wake the people first. Malcolm X, that's who I thought it was, but I didn't want to put that out there. I thought it was Malcolm X. And I've seen that before, but today I knew what we were going to be talking about. It really held true when I saw it. It was just confirmation for me, as always, from the universe, you know, that what I'm doing and what we doing and my contribution and to what feels like, you know, is nothing. But it is to me, you know, everybody's like, you know, this, that, and the other. I'm always do this. I'm going to be 102 years old talking to Patrick Alexander, you know, about how we contributors to black liberation. I mean, that's just how I feel about it. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not going to believe anything else. I'm not, because of my seeds. I'm not going to do that. So I'm wondering if you think that there will be like a generational shift in the mindset now, like as opposed to the elders that are there, no disrespect to their knowledge. They are powerful in everything that they do, but they still carry some generational mindset with them that I...
Because I'm chomping at the bit, you know? And you asked the perfect question, you know what I'm saying? What is this? You know what I'm saying? The mindset. So the perfect term to explain and to give a validation to your question is inherent fear, okay? The inherent fear of our people is in our DNA, okay? The white man has been very successful in incorporating and inculcating himself into the minds of black people in a masterful way. So then when we set out on these endeavors, the proud endeavors, the black liberation movement, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, I want to say the civil rights movement, but I have to put that in a different context, you know what I'm saying? And if we get back to that, I'll speak on that in a very specific way, because I had a conversation with Judge Joe Brown on a podcast last week, and we spoke to that. But It's inherent fear, you know, that creates this mindset. And one of the perfect scenarios, I can make real scenarios. You know, I don't have to allude to theories. You know what I'm saying? I can use real scenarios. Just yesterday, when we made the pronunciation, I said, hey, look, everybody getting these $1,200 checks back, which is basically nothing. You know, trinkets, or whatever that the government is spilling out here right now. You know, they call it stimulus, but I call it relief, relief funds. You know what I'm saying? To people that's in actually dire straits that don't even realize. I said, but, you know, according to your Christian orientation, you owe $120 of that to the church in the form of tithes. If I'm not mistaken, I grew up in the church. I said, but, you know, in my mind, as I put, as I was composing that text, I didn't say to them that, hey, look, you giving that to a concept, okay, that you cannot prove, okay? But I didn't say that because I knew how it would register with the people. So I just simply said, why don't you give 10% of that 10% to something that you can see and you can measure? Okay, that registered with the conscience of people. People called me on the phone yesterday, Kim Schneider. They said, you know, one in particular, a truck driver called me. He said, brother, he said, you made that so plain. It felt like you was in the truck whipping my ass. Okay? And I said, brother, I said, one of the greatest teachers that I ever known, Elijah Muhammad, said that you make the truth so plain that a fool could understand. Okay? We don't have to have all this high articulation, high verbiage to get this point across, because it's very simple what black people need to be doing. And due to that inherent fear and that mindset that you're speaking about, it causes us to be different. It causes us to be fearful when we should be confident. The opposite of fear is confident, and the opposite of confident is fear. You can easily define both of them by taking one away. If you have fear, then you lack confidence. If you have confidence, then you lack fear. Okay? We are diffident. We don't have the confidence that's necessary to push forth a liberation movement. So we constantly have to remind ourselves, and I kind of like how you say, well, you the verb. That means you the action. You know what I'm saying? I'm not the theory. You know, so I don't waste a lot of time sitting around here verbally masturbate and creating debates with people about what we need to be doing. Well, I'm just gonna show you. Here go your coin right here. Do you have one?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? What happens if you don't have one and you got a degree on your wall though? What happens when you don't have an ear coin? So, you know, I'm not against your degree, but you shouldn't be against the pragmatic and practical reality that we need to build. And that reality needs to be built from confident black people. So that's what we pushing for. We pushing for the confidence of black people, and we warn for the minds of our people, because every action is preceded by thought. And if we can get the thought right, and then we can show an example, because our children don't have no problem with what it is that we do. You know, it's the ones who have learned how to be fearful of white people and know that at some point in time, black liberation is on a collision course with white supremacy. See, I don't back down from that war. Exactly. That's something that gotta happen. That's imminent to me. So then, you know, putting the things in place. If you come to that land and take down a blade of grass, that's gonna be your ass. You understand? Okay, you take a blade of grass, they're gonna be your ass. Okay?
All of it.
It's gonna be my ass, one or two. So, you know, that determination gonna have to go into fruition. So, you know, I tell people all the time, well, you ain't gotta worry about white people if you ain't doing shit. You ain't doing shit, you ain't gotta worry about white people. You know, so you know, I gotta worry about white people, but my thing is, I relish today. You know, I relish that battle. So, yeah, it's the inherent fear, Kim Snyder. That was a great question, and all the black people that are listening, the reason why you stand and justify and validate things contrary to black liberation is because of your fear. That's why, your fear. Yeah.
Yeah, I when you were talking about, you know, that side of it, and you know, your agenda is of course way different than mine. My agenda is just, my agenda, let me say it the right way. I have unmitigated faith that eventually people will open their eyes to things. You know what I'm saying? It might not be because they heard something I said, but it might be that I planted, you know, planted a seed. You know, I just had a conversation. Well, I have conversations all the time, not as intense as ours, but I try to, I do my best, you know, when I'm surrounded by someone I know that I can, you know, speak on liberation. And, you know, I've had a couple of pushbacks on a lot of what I say and how I say it. And, you know, I had one brother tell me not to use the term genocide. And I said, why? Why? Well, that's not what I would do. I said, well, are you for Black liberation? Oh, yeah, absolutely. I said, well, then you push for your Black liberation, whatever way that you want. And I'm going to sit over here and speak what is true to me. And based off my history and what I know and growing up around white folks, and I mean real right white folks, okay? The epitome of today would be a Trump supporter, white folks. Is genocide, okay? It's generational, deliberate. And it doesn't matter, and I think I've said this before, white people don't care if you die. They're not trying to kill you at a personal level. They're not doing like other countries do with population, whatever. I'm not saying that's not what they're doing now. I'm talking about in general, everyday walking around white folks. That's not what they're doing, okay? What that they don't care. What they care is that you remain defeated and that you remain in a place where what they speak about you is true. So no matter what you do that is they would consider, white folks could, good, I consider everyday living and what should be do what Black folks should be doing as a movement. But what they consider good, they're always able to say, but. And every time that they say that, I used to tell my nephew who was in prison for several years, and I communicated with him, and every time I would get off the phone with him, I would say, do what you were intended to do for who you are as a person. And when you get out in this world, when you walk out of those doors, you make sure that you prove every fucking white person wrong. That's what I want you to do. I want you to prove all of them wrong. Because at the end of the day, I get that there is a slide and there is a scale between good and bad. And I understand some people's good is other people's bad and vice versa. But at the end of the day, white folks are wrong. They're not necessarily wrong for their mindset, but they're wrong because they act on it. You know what I'm saying? They're just dead ass wrong. Because what they truly believe in their heart of hearts is that Black folks are not actual human beings. To them, they have fostered that same belief generationally, and they have had, let me be clear about this again, they have had no reason, not one stinking ass reason to change that. There's nothing in them that benefits them to believe differently about Black folks. They're not included in their life. They're not important in their life. They don't manage anything in their life. They're not, you know, they're not coming for dinner. They're not coming for barbecues. Their kids, and even if they did, let's reverse the roles. How many white kids get sent over to, you know, the projects to go to hang out that night with their Black friend at school? I know that sounds stupid, but that's the mindset that we are up against, that type of shit. And then, you know, Black folks will turn around and be like, okay, well, you know, let them go over there. Why would you subject your children to that mindset that is so deeply embedded in them that they don't even have to speak about you disliking Black folks for you to dislike them? You know what I'm saying? And you, I know you touched on the civil rights movement, and I don't know that we're going to do, you know, that time frame today, because I really wanted to talk about, you know, whatever, but we won't, you know us, we'll be back on here talking about something. So let me kind of close off, if you will, with you, because I want you to talk about not necessarily what you've done. We know what you're doing. We know why you're doing it. We know that you out there. We know that you open to other people, you know, either contributing to your movement or contributing to their own, because at the end of the day, you and I are the type of soldiers that just, we just want to win. We don't care who wins it in this battle of Black liberation. There's no winners here except for Black folks at the end of the day. We ain't up against white folks. We just want to maintain a freedom that white folks walk around thinking they already have. And so I want to talk about contributions. We had the conversation about contributions. Mm-hmm. I want people to understand like the tithes to the church. You know what I mean? I'm going to put myself out there right now, and then I want you to answer this, but I'm going to put myself out there right now, which you know I would not normally do. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to say this. I don't really have a lot. I stepped out on faith a couple of years ago to do real estate for a multitude of reasons. One of them because of the contribution that I feel like I can do to Black liberation with increasing resources in the Black community at whatever level that looks like. Mm-hmm. And I don't walk around in a corporate mm-hmm. job. I don't have a day paycheck. And I can't contribute what I would like to the movement. But everything that I do right now is for the potential that I have to mm-hmm. be able to create mm-hmm. what I want to create for my contribution. But when I got something, a little extra, mm-hmm. anything, mm-hmm. I don't care, mm-hmm. you know, if it's $20, mm-hmm. if it's $100, mm-hmm. I send something. Mm-hmm. I don't have a lot to give, but it's that important to me mm-hmm. That you keep going. Mm-hmm. Like your movement mm-hmm. is that important to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm a white lady. So I want you to talk about that. First of all, you accept contributions. First of all, that's the first thing I want you to talk about. But then I want you to talk about why it is so mm-hmm. incredibly important, even in your lack, that something mm-hmm. is contributing about those numbers about
contributions. Well, let me just say this and put it out there for the listeners right now. I can barely hear you, Patrick Alexander. Hold on, let me make sure that this phone is...
A little bit, yeah.
Hold on, I just want to make sure.
It might be me.
Okay, hopefully you can hear me better.
Yeah, it's a little low, but I think that's my fault.
First of all,
I got it turned up
now,
so go ahead.
Listening, the cash out to the Black Liberation Movement is $BLMMS. Okay, that's $BLMMS. If you want to make a contribution to the Black Liberation Movement and what it is that we are pushing for to become a reality in this world. We pushing for this to become a reality that Black people can control our own circumstances and do that with power. The Cash App is $BLMMS. Now, let me just speak to Kim what you are saying, because it's so powerful what you're saying, all the way back to the mindset of white people toward Black people. One thing that sticks out, Dr. Claude Anderson said, that Black people were brought into this country to be a permanent underclass. White people have worked very hard at maintaining that status quo. White people have worked very hard at maintaining that status mm-hmm. quo. Most of the white people that I come into contact with, and this should be termed just like this. We need to hear conversations just like this, where we talking white people and Black people as the variables that play these situations out. Mm-hmm. The maintenance of the status quo mm-hmm. makes white people comfortable. So what does that do to Black people, the maintenance of the status quo? Either you learn how to consider that as a normal, or you fight against that, because it's the dehumanization of Black people in this status quo that is the problem. Mm-hmm. So it's Black people that are born into the world mm-hmm. that is not tolerant of this type of norms. This can't be normal. But I ask Black people all the time, I said, is there anything that suggests to you that white people have changed their mind about your position in society? Is there anything? I mean, from the high level of law and politics, the high level of economy, or whatever, have white people exemplified that they have changed their mind about your dehumanization and the normalization of that status? And have they indicated that? So if they haven't indicated that, what you gonna do? What you gonna do? Okay? So, you know, it's friction that comes with Black people with the message of Black liberation. And to speak to the economic enfranchisement of this type of determination, meaning how do we get the funding, you know, from a people who are inherent constantly fearful of this type of, how do you get that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you begin to get people to give of their resources to help you with something that they essentially afraid of? You know, that's a hard task, okay? So the thing mm-hmm. is now, you know, I have to learn how to look at mm-hmm. things and begin to, you know, talk to people and devise different ways to get our people to become, you know, get on board. So, you know, we have to devise economic funding program that we think can work. And we come up with a dollar a day for our liberation. And basically, it's a very powerful idea.
Mm-hmm.
See, one black person giving $1 million, to me, that's capitalism. That's not powerful enough for determination like this. One black mm-hmm. person giving $1 million, or even a white person giving $1 million to a black cop. Mm-hmm. What's powerful and what's liberation is right. that 1 million black right. people give $1. You see, 1 million black people giving $1 is powerful.
Exactly.
Because you end up with exactly. that same $1 million, but you had exactly. 1 million people who believed in that concept, and they have identified themselves, and they gave a nominal amount.
Enough.
Because guess what?
Yep.
When they see the intent and the purpose and the aim of that dollar donation, then guess what? They able to give that dollar again tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So now you got $2 million. You see what mm-hmm. I'm saying? But you got 1 million people giving a very nominal
exactly.
fee.
I do.
So, you know, that's the slow process. And that's what liberation right. is. And just let me say this, because I do want to mm-hmm. touch on this, and I think the viewing people, I mean the listening audience, will learn, and hopefully their spirit will be invoked to begin to understand black liberation and reach out and help the practical reality, the practical application become a reality. In that conversation with Judge Joe Brown, mm-hmm. he said something that very powerful that resonated with me. He said, why should white people mm-hmm. respect black people? He said, we ain't never went to war with white people. And I remember coming up in school, Kim, I was a little old dude, but I'd fight your ass, for real. You understand what I'm saying? I would fight your ass, you know? And I got my ass whooped, you know, a few times.
Yes.
But I whooped more ass than I got mm-hmm. my ass whooped. But one thing about the people who whooped my ass, I respected them. And one thing about them toward me, they respected me for trying to whoop their ass. White people is not going to respect black people until we go to war with them in every area of activity, battle, right. concern. Okay, every area.
Mm-hmm.
When Dr. Neely Fuller
mm-hmm.
sat down and devised those areas, and Dr. Francis Prince Wilson, may she rest in mm-hmm. power, began to tell us what we needed to do. That was internalized in those areas of education, mm-hmm. economics, entertainment, politics, labor, war, law, sex, religion. In all those areas, we have to go to war with white people mm-hmm. in those areas, because they control that and they create the reality for us in those areas. So we have to go to war with them in those areas. When mm-hmm. I say war, that's what I mean. In these societal areas, we have to go to war. And then Judge Joe Brown said, he said, we ain't done mm-hmm. that. We haven't went to war with white people. And then some people may say, well, what about the civil rights era? Mm-hmm. He said, no, mm-hmm. that wasn't a war. That was you getting your ass kicked. Okay? That was you getting your ass kicked while begging them to be a part of some shit that they had going on. You see what I'm saying? So understand that. You know, so the Black Liberation Movement is a pronunciation
yes.
of war. Understand, it's a pronunciation of war, and black mm-hmm. people determining that we're gonna establish our power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not done to the detriment of any other ethnicity, race, right. nationality, whatever, okay, until you start to impede that.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what we got going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they don't, mm-hmm. you know, white people don't even see you as worthy opponents, let alone a threat.
And until you are one to them, they ain't gonna move one way or the other. And
when I was in Detroit, the Nation of Islam had me come to speak to the determination that spun out of Mississippi. And when I got there, I was in a very elaborate hotel, the Hotel Marriott or whatever, where they had me and my son there. Dr. Murphy met me there along with some brothers, strong brothers in the Nation of Islam. We were sitting down dining at the hotel restaurant that night, which was that Friday night. And Dr. Murphy was giving us a lesson. And we were all sitting there listening, me and Brother Andre Muhammad, Brother Kenneth Wien, my son, and Dr. Murphy, and Minister Shabbat. And I noticed the white people that were walking around in the hotel. And what I noticed about the white people walking around the hotel, they didn't notice us. They didn't notice all the Muslims walking around, and the Nation of Islam had basically consumed the whole of the hotel rooms and everything for safety. They didn't notice that. But watch this. I mentioned that. I said, y'all notice that white people navigation has not changed, even though the strongest black organization in the United States is present, okay? Right? They navigation didn't change. They were still drinking, getting drunk, laughing, and doing whatever. I'm just watching this. Okay, but watch this. The next day after I went to the Shrine of Black Madonna and gave a presentation and sat on a panel discussion on separation, when we were transported back to the hotel, we got on the hotel elevator and we came up to the lobby floor from the street level, first floor. We came up to the third floor and the lobby floor, and some white people were on the elevator with us. And when the doors opened to the third floor, it was a group of young black Muslims that were standing in organized attention, taking no direction from nobody but the people who were orchestrating their movement. And they were not budge unless they were given an instruction. The first people to step off that elevator were white people that were standing in front of me and my son. And as soon as that elevator door opened and they saw that kind of discipline and order amongst black people, the first thing the white people say, we must be on the wrong floor. Well, it was the same floor that you were on last night getting drunk. And black people were unorganized and carrying on their daily business. But when you see black people organized, and not just black people, you saw black children that was in uniform and in order. That means that they were taking an order that did not come from white people. The immediate mindset of the white people was that we must be on the wrong floor, which also indicates I must be in a different world. Okay, so if that told me then, if we can organize black people in the world like that, then it would be a different world and a different reality to white people. Because white people, even though they may not directly control you, they know that you are in a position where you cannot control yourself. So when you exemplify that you are controlling yourself, white people begin to take notes. And then, you know, that just resonates with me. They said, we must be on the wrong floor.
Exactly. They were. they were. They were on the wrong floor, the wrong place, the wrong time. And you told me that story, and I'm really glad. I'm going to close with that, because it's just on every level of the word of black folks and how I feel about black folks and how I think the white mentality is, that is it to the absolute perfection of what I feel is my truth. That is what needs to happen, and that's what needs to happen. I'm not talking about only for black folks. I'm talking about that needs to be the reaction for white folks. Like, what the fuck is going on? That's what I want them to say to me. Not come at me and tell me why I hate people or why you don't like white folks. I need them to be concerned. I need to hear concern in their voice. And because then I know that what we doing,
that's right,
and what everybody's doing to contribute to black liberation is working. And I need that's it to work. And you need it to work. And black folks need it to work. And you already know what I'm going to say that I believe in it. I believe in what you're doing, and I believe in black folks. I believe in every single one of them, even the ones who have been asleep the longest. I believe that there is a awakening and that it is going to happen. And when it does, this movement is going to be unstoppable at every level. And again, let me say, in closing out, how much I appreciate you. And not just because of our relationship, even though, here I go, everybody know, even though I am beyond grateful that that you choose me. And I'm going to say it like that because you don't have to. I don't have to be in your circle. I don't have to be in your sphere. I don't have to be anywhere, even in a location or a conversation with you, based on who I am and my background. But you allow that, and I appreciate it and stay in gratitude for it. It's important. But I meant what I said at the beginning. Patrick Alexander, again, COF of the Black Liberation Movement in Mississippi, is the verb, but he is also the foundation. He has been doing this longer than half of y'all been breathing. Feel like,
well,
like
let
I
me
said,
say this,
you know,
in closing,
you are
Kim,
the bottom of that pyramid.
All of that. Well, understand, you know, your exceptional position as well. You're a very exceptional person, and what you have decided to do is forego the privilege that automatically afforded to you as a white person, and you have decided that you would take on something that 99.9% of white people would not do. So that has to be commended. Yes, it was a strong reluctance in becoming affiliated with you in this manner. And that's only out of respect that I got the Black Liberation Movement and Black people's future with my life. Okay, I said the same thing that my teacher, Baba Mwalimu Maruti, said. Right. To become a warrior is a selfless decision. That's why I'm out here. I don't give a fuck about coronavirus. I don't give a fuck about that. I had bacteria infection in my heart that took me to my death, okay? To my deathbed, and I came back from that. So a fucking virus is nothing that's gonna stop me from going out here and doing what I do every day. Mm-hmm. So what I wanna say is that I commend you for being the white exception, okay? The one that's sitting up and saying, I'm that white girl that's going to step out there and I'm going to do what I know need to be done from my position. Okay, like you said, this is my truth. Okay, so I'm going to have Patrick Alexander, the chief organizer, facilitator of the Black Liberation Movement, on my show. I'm going to create a podcast and I'm going to get this word out there the best that I can. So you also should be committed, and I appreciate you, and I'm pretty sure we'll be doing this again soon. I have to go. And I appreciate you having me on and creating this platform. Yeah.
I know you do. You're busy. I appreciate you. And I thank everybody that showed up and offered some time, as all of my guests know and all of my followers. I love y'all. I adore you. I believe in you immensely. Peace. And I mean it from the bottom of my heart.